The narrative is everything. The narrative that they tell us and that we eventually tell ourselves really does build the whole of society. It builds our individual responses to things, especially emotionally. And then from that emotion, we often take action. Like there's the fight, flight, or freeze response that happens in everybody. When you are faced with something that's really terrifying, you either fight it or you flee from it or you freeze and do nothing because you can't think of any good options or you're literally paralyzed with fear. And in that way, the grand masters of the universe, royal family lines and entrenched bankers and captains of ancient industry, industries that have been around since there were industry, basically. Perhaps they've changed names and changed hands, but the legacy powers that we've known our entire recorded history, these are the masters of the narratives, more so than they are masters of managing finance or managing technology or managing industry. They are masters of managing the space up here in the general population. And Klaus Schwab, I have his book somewhere, just released his latest book, a few months back called The Great Narrative. And this is where they set out their talking points that they're going to repeat over and over and over to all of humanity until we all start living into the narrative. We're all going to shuffle around, they hope, and take our respective roles within this narrative that they're selling us. And the important part of the narrative, I think, it's really not the talking points, it's the sense they give us that all of it is inevitable. So, the World Economic Forum, which Klaus Schwab describes in this interview that he gave in Singapore in 2016, he says there are basically 600 people involved in the World Economic Forum, 600 of the most highly educated people in the world, many of whom are concentrated in Switzerland because that's the headquarters of the forum, and they have been guiding the agendas ever since his organization started to catch on. 600 people. And these do not include, many of the people that we elect. We've probably never heard of most of them. And then he also mentions, of course, that they have the Young Global Leaders program where they groom those who they think are going to come into power or those who they're going to help to come into power all around the world. They groom them in the forum, and then, they have then the same ideology as these 600 people. So over the decades, I think the World Economic Forum really only started to catch on in 1971 when Henry Kissinger went there for the first time, and then it built from there. And it's mostly corporate heads. What they do is they create public-private partnerships. The governments will partner with corporations to bring about a better world. Are we ever going to get sick of hearing them pretend that what they want to do is build a better world? They don't even tell you whose idea of better it is. But when you listen to them talk to each other on the countless thousands of videos they put out and panels they hold and publications they write, you can see very, very clearly that the better applies to a small group of people who control corporations mostly and NGOs. But the goals of the forum are the same basic goals as the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda. And all their timelines seem to add up. Both of them talk about the massive changes that were going to happen in 2020 and then again in 2030. And they did officially partner in June 2019, just shortly before the coronavirus pandemic happened, right? And then Klaus Schwab wrote his book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. He released that in June 2020. And now his next book, of course, is The Great Narrative. And what is the World Economic Forum's narrative? Well, remember, you will own nothing and be happy. That's one of their big narratives that they were putting out at about the same time as Klaus was going around there in 2016. You will own nothing and be happy. That's one of the ideas that came out of this World Economic Forum. Pardon me, I had to sneeze. That's not a very winning narrative, is it? And lately, the World Economic Forum is feeling the pressure of people rejecting their narratives. Here's a few examples of other narratives that they've put out.
Go. It will. First of all, it will definitely happen. I was talking about 6G earlier, which is around 2030. I would say that by then, definitely the smartphone as we know it today will not anymore be the usual kind of the most common interface.
Wow.
This, many of these things will be built directly into our bodies.
I think we're going to have to think about a recalibration of a whole range of human rights that are playing out online, from freedom of speech to the freedom to, to be free from online violence.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
Doesn't that all sound awesome? Eating bugs, being tracked everywhere you go, a rejigging of human rights to kind of clamp down on free speech. And why would they want to do that? Because people in general don't like what the World Economic Forum is putting out, and they don't like having to deal with naysayers and people arguing against them. So they went on a bit of an offensive through their corporate magazine connections, Fortune and Forbes and things like that, talking about how they have to combat these terrible conspiracy theories that people are spreading about the World Economic Forum. Well, Klaus, my friend, we're using your own words. We're using the words of the people you invite on. We're using the words of the heads of the companies that stand to benefit the most from this so-called Great Reset or the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And what is the Fourth Industrial Revolution? According to Noah Yuval Harari, it's basically what David Icke has been warning everybody about, that the super elite, and by that I just mean the people with the most money and control are going to try to, turn the figurative term human resources into the literal human resource. They're going to change us from independent entities wandering around the earth doing things and following our dreams and our instincts. They want to control all that now. It's just more efficient for them. It's more efficient if they can predict what we're going to do, if they can stop us from being upset when they do things we don't like, if they can flatten the curve of income across the whole world. They always talk about this. They're like, oh, we're so worried about income inequality. Well, do you really think that that means that they want to enrich everybody that's working in third world and the child labor they're using for mining cobalt for their electric vehicle dream world? Do you think it means they want those children to be earning $75,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year? No, they just want everyone to be on a universal basic income. And that way they can just activate populations to go work in mines here or there, wherever they need them, but make a bunch of textiles, pick a bunch of grapes and lettuce, whatever it is that they need at the moment, instead of having all these pesky employees that demand health insurance and days off and chairs and desks and lunchrooms and things like that. That's all. That's not sustainable for them. And so they do put this narrative out there that it's all going to be over for us soon. We won't own anything, but we also won't be working. And don't worry, they've figured out a way for us to be happy about that. And when you listen to Noah Yuval Harari, you realize what they think they're going to do to make us happy, and that's ply us with drugs and make us play video games.
Again, I think that the biggest question in maybe in economics and politics of the coming decades will be what to do with all these useless people. The problem is more boredom and what to do with them, and how will they find some sense of meaning in life when they are basically meaningless, worthless. My best guess at present is a combination of drugs and computer games as a solution for more. It's already happening.
And they make it seem like this is inevitable. They have parades of CEOs up there on the stage at Davos talking about metaverse, for example. I watched two panel discussions on metaverse and how this is going to shape the future. This was from the 2022 session, and they talk about how this is already being used. It's virtual reality or augmented reality. And augmented reality is something like this. You put on glasses or a headset, which show you things right in your field of vision, on top of what you just see out in the real world. So if I had them on right now, perhaps I would be able to see, like live chat. If I had a live stream, I would be able to see all the live chat just going by my eyes. And yes, of course, this would block parts of your field of vision. So I was really shocked when I heard them say that surgeons, neurosurgeons, are going to be the next iteration. They're working on these glasses now, and they're going to be being used by some neurosurgeons to do brain surgery. I don't know about you, but it seems to me like if anybody needs an unobstructed field of vision, it would be a neurosurgeon. But they plan to have stuff in the field of vision for neurosurgery, neurosurgeons, like the patient's vitals, like be over here. And the woman says, the woman on the Davos panel, she says, well, this will help so the surgeons don't have to turn their head to look at the monitor that's probably right there that has, you know, the heart rate and the pulse and whatever else displayed on it. That's her vision of a best first use of the metaverse technologies and integrating digital and biological systems, which, if you recall, this is what Klaus has been going around saying everywhere for years. It's a talking point. What we are going to see is a fusion of our digital, our physical, and our biological identities. He said it a million times, and now these people on these stages say his same words in their speeches. Like I said, the World Economic Forum grooms people. It is very, very much a cult in that it is ideologically based. They are technocrats. They are, as Klaus says in this interview, he says they are very into systems theory. He says, if you look at governments these days, they are all engaged in crisis management. So nobody is devoting sufficient time around the world. You have to take a systems approach, which is cybernetics. He says, I look out my window at Davos in Switzerland, and I see the WHO building and telecom buildings out my windows, but they operate in silos. So what the World Economic Forum did and has been doing for decades is bringing the heads of all of these organizations together and it's selling them on this ideology, the ideology of technocracy. Remove all authority from the world except for algorithms and mathematics, modeling, predictive software. That's what the World Economic Forum wants. That's what they're doing. And they've got the narrative. All the talking points about we're going to merge our bodies with machines, we're going to wire our brains up, not figuratively, but through, like, it's through light and through chemicals that they can integrate into our bodies, into our cells through nanotechnology. That can communicate back and forth with the cloud and with satellites and with the internet of things, the internet of bodies, the internet of bio nano things. Through that, they say, they can predict everything. They can plan everything. To them, that's sustainable. To them, that's inclusive. You see? They want to build a better world through sustainability and inclusivity. That just means they won't let anyone escape their system. Because if they let people escape their system, it won't be predictable for them. There will be wild cards coming in. Like, for example, imagine their network of self-driving vehicles, which they really badly want. Imagine if some people in town still drove gas vehicles and not autonomous vehicles. Well, they couldn't account for those people. They couldn't predict what those people were going to do, and it would throw their whole system off. So yeah, by inclusive, they mean they're going to force every single person to do this. Now, this might be sounding a little bit doomy at this point, because I now am playing into their narrative. The main point of the narrative is nothing that we've discussed so far. To me, the main point of their narrative is that they're telling us that it's inevitable, that resistance is futile, that that you can't stop progress. In fact, they really hate the idea of deciding that something they've tried has failed and then going back, saying, oh, that failed, let's go back to the old system. They hate that idea. You can never do that in progress land. In their cult, that is a sin. You always have to be going forward, trying something new. Always, always, always. So anything that worked in the past to them is out. Just erase it from memory. Erase it from history. Don't allow people to talk about it. I mean, what do you think all their censorship is about? What do you think all their dead links on the internet are about? What do you think their closing of libraries and censoring of books is about? They don't want us even to have reference point for the past. They only want us to push forward. I mean, what did he say here? One of the issues I see is that people are not able to cope anymore, even intellectually, with all the challenges. Okay, and I don't think Klaus is out there talking to, you know, the lower classes or even the lower middle classes, or probably not even the middle classes. So the people he is seeing that can't cope with all the challenges, meaning these forced technological changes to every facet of our lives, are probably, you know, kind of higher up the food chain, managers of banks. I don't know. But he does mention banks in his talk, and he says, you know, a year ago, I had to tell bankers what fintech is, financial technology, which is actually basically digital currency and AI making all your decisions for you. Anyway, he says, I had to tell bankers what that was a year ago, and now they know they have to learn about it and use it if they want to survive. You see, so What's really disturbing is nobody wants this, but there's a certain group, a cult, and I think they go all the way back to this. This is H.G. Wells' book called The Open Conspiracy. And they talk about how they have to find and groom generations of people in every sphere of society and get them ideologically aligned with the program. And that was published in 1923, I think, somewhere in there. And so Klaus's little group now is accelerating whatever that open conspiracy is. H.G. Wells in the book says, we can't do this undercover. We can't keep it secret. Because then we would attract people who have devious minds. So we want people with honest minds. So we have to talk about this conspiracy out in the open. And what is the World Economic Forum? To me, it's them talking about this all out in the open. Okay, where was I? Right, Klaus is explaining to the audience that he's met a lot of resistance, but slowly over time, they've been able to sort of strong arm everybody by putting some kind of existential threat on their industries and their jobs, so you will come along into this merging of biological, digital, and physical reality. You will come along and do fintech. You will come along and put children into virtual reality school. You will come along and allow biosensors into your body so that we can monitor your health for the global good. You will come along and do everything we say. These cybernetics, sustainable, mathematical model, AI-driven, panopticon, psychopaths. And they have dragged everyone along to those things. So let me continue with what he said. He says, okay, people are not able to cope anymore, even intellectually, with all the challenges. I consider myself, he says, to be one of the best informed people. A year ago, I had to explain to a banker what fintech is. Now every bank has to find out in order to survive. This is a very disturbing progress for many people. They just feel overwhelmed, and you develop a kind of a bunker mentality. They say, why not my little small world? This creates a kind of a tendency to a kind of egoism, maybe even nationalism, fundamentalism. You want to go back to the old world, he says. So this is the type of reaction Klaus is getting, or got, out there in the world to these ideas of these technocrats, these cyberneticians, these control freaks, these transhumanist control freaks. And instead of saying, well, gee, I'm trying to build a better world here, right? Everybody at Davos, we're trying to build a better world. And most people can't cope with our utopian and drastic changes that we're proposing, these technological changes. Most people are actually going into a bunker mentality, like a survival mentality. They want to hide from what's happening. They just want to survive it because it sounds so terrible. So guys, maybe we should rethink our plans here. Maybe we are trying to force things on people that they don't want. Don't you think he would? If he's trying to build a better world, if all these people are just making humanity happier and more equal and spreading the wealth and the love, don't you think they would have reeled back their plans? But that is not at all what they're doing. And I believe it reveals that we have to stand up to it and continue to let them know we don't want this. Nobody wants this. It's not inevitable either, Klaus. Nobody wants it. And you know, pardon me, the fact that the World Economic Forum had to call on its press partners to defend it from quote-unquote conspiracy theories tells me that still to this day, they are faced with a vast swath of people who want nothing to do with their crazy plants. So their big goal now is to just shut those people up, just the same way as they clearly shut up the bankers or force the bankers to start looking at fintech. They're just going to have to if they want to survive. They've done this in every industry. And they plan to continue to do this. So they know nobody wants it. And they know this is a big problem. Instead of stopping, what I think they're going to do, what I know they're doing from listening to them, is they are just going to push the resistors aside. And I think they have worse plans for us than that. And they are going directly for the children. Because the children don't have, obviously, the experience that we do. They don't know how it used to be. The children grew up, they're digital natives, they call them, right? All they know is a world with this much digital and this much technology involved. So the children aren't as resistant. And the children, of course, can't see through their word games when they say things like, we need financial inclusion. There are billions of people around the world who are unbanked. We need to get them banked. You know what that means? That just means they want them hooked up to the digital control grid where they can monitor them, where they can charge them fees to use their money instead of having them just trade locally, and where they can punish them through access, through taxes, through fees, through access to their funds and all of this. And they can get them on a subscription service where they pay monthly for all of this as well. That's what financial inclusion means. Anyway, the kids can't see through this at all. They just hear, they read the front page of these corporate websites, which all now have this paragraph where it's, we use our resources to catalyze movements towards a better, more inclusive and diverse society. They'll just say that. And young people believe them. So yeah, that's the plan, is to just go straight for the young people. When I listen to those two World Economic Forum speeches about the metaverse, the overwhelming thing that a couple of panelists would talk about on both panels was that the children, they needed to make sure it was safe for children. The children are going to be the best users of this. This is going to be the whole future. And children will be free in there. They'll be safe and free. And they must harness the imaginations of the children to build their own worlds. And the children will set the standards for these worlds. And it's just very, very creepy and dystopian for me to listen to it. Because do you want to live in a world run by children? I mean, more and more, that's what it feels like. I went to the dentist the other day and I felt like I was in kindergarten. It was unbelievable. It wasn't my usual dentist. I could go on and on, and you listen to the politicians talk with their non-answers and their tones. It's infantilizing. You go to phone any business for anything and they have that happy, chirpy, hi guys, I don't want to live in a world run by children. I want the adults to be in charge. But the adults don't want metaverse. The adults don't want a paperless world. They don't want to pick their avatar shoes and hairstyle and do everything in the virtual world. They don't even want to learn it. We want the real world as an option for us. The children are the answer. Just like in the fascist revolution, just like in the communist revolution. Why do they go for the children? Because children are easy to convince. They're easy to manipulate. They're easy to bribe. They're easy to get as a wedge, use as a power force, an energy force, and a wedge between the power structure that's talking about a horrible future and the children who the parents want, they want to be happy. And the children suddenly start telling them, it'll make me really happy, Mom, if you let me create a world in Roblox. And also in the real world, if you let me choose to be the gender that I'm not. And it's really hard for parents to stand up to this when the entire culture is on the child's side, if you see what I'm saying. It actually serves the purposes of the controllers, because the controllers then use it to make tension between the children and the adults. And so when the controllers have access to the children, they reinforce what the children want. They make them promises. They say they're right. They say, you know, sometimes parents, they just don't understand youth anymore. We do. Come with us. It's really sad. You just have to let go of your parents. And no matter how well you raise your children, that is an extremely powerful force, especially now with the digital technology and these worlds they can go into, that to the child is more real, probably, than the real world is. So, the narrative. For us adults, it's absolutely terrifying, and they're telling us that it's coming no matter what we do. For the children, they don't understand why their parents are so scared, and they're going to go along. But what are you going to do with all of these useless people? As Yuval Noah Harari tells us, most of us will be soon. We've got two choices. We don't want to just take drugs and play video games like Yuval Harari suggests might be a good idea for some of us. We have to abandon the tech. I'm sorry, but we have to abandon it and build the world that is not reliant on it anymore. We have to be insistent with our children. We have to show them a better way. Show them the old world. Show them how these promises made usually get broken. Educate them about all of that. Keep them close to us. But mostly, I think what we need is the narrative, the other narrative. Not only that are these World Economic Forum types crazy, like they're legitimately crazy and evil. When they can sit on stages and tell you how bad this is going to be for a vast majority of the world's population, it's going to be so terrible for us as we lose our jobs, as we become useless, as we, you know, are monitored, even our emotional reaction to like the leaders that are doing this to us. We have to manufacture somehow inside ourselves the idea that we're happy to see them. Otherwise, the state will know and will punish us. I mean, Yuval Harari said that. Listen.
Just imagine North Korea in 20 years, when everybody has to wear a biometric bracelet, which constantly monitors your blood pressure, your heart rate, your brain activity, 24 hours a day. You listen to a speech on the radio by the great leader, and they know what you actually feel. You can clap your hands and smile, but if you're angry, they know you'll be in the gulag tomorrow morning. And if we allow the emergence of such total surveillance regimes, don't think that the rich and powerful in places like Davos will be safe. Just ask Jeff Bezos.
That's a pipe dream for the control freaks, right? But listen, it's probably a lie. What it's doing, again, is trying to let us think that this is all inevitable. And there's no escape. Even inside your own mind, there's no escape. And if we believe them about that, we are going to start to live into that narrative. That's how it works. That's the hypnotism. That's magic. You tell a story enough times, it can be a totally false story. But if people believe it, or they believe that your prediction is inevitable, they will begin to act as if that's all true. They will. Everyone will. It's basically the narcissistic dynamic. The narcissist has a false perception of who he or she is, and you're only allowed to be in their orbit if you serve one of their purposes. You're either the golden child because you agree with everything they say and you do their bidding, or you're the scapegoat because you fight against them all the time, which actually helps them in a lot of ways because it kind of reinforces their rightness. They can always go, look at that person who doesn't think I'm right. They're bad and terrible. Good people think I'm right, you know? Or you're an enabler in another way. You don't take either side and you don't challenge the false narrative. That's where we're at with the World Economic Forum narrative and the Yuval Noah Harari sense that this is coming no matter what. You can't stop it. You can't stop progress. Progress will march on, even if this means that most of you will lose your jobs, be bored, feel useless, just crumble inside. We need to challenge that narrative before people start living into it as if it's true. We need to say we can have healthy food and healthy healthy communities. We can reproduce. We can make lovely families. We can set up schools. We can still drive gas-powered vehicles and travel and be free. We have to challenge their narrative at every turn with our own, with a better one, by reminding people of the past. You know what wouldn't be a bad idea? Is a network that shows all the old classic television shows, like that are about families, that are about normal things. Eight is Enough. Never mind. I'm not going to go off on a tangent of naming them because I probably don't remember them, to be honest. We need those things again. We need it out there. Because this little Noah Yuval Harari, who reminds me of that Nosferatu vampire guy from the old movie, he's not right. He's just convincing. And he likes to talk. So he says it over and over again. But he's not right. And this isn't an absolute. He can't tell the future. And neither can Klaus Schwab, and neither can the AI, because humans are unpredictable. So we can do whatever we want, anytime. And we better start, because if we believe the future belongs to robots, guess what? We're going to build that future for them. Okay, everybody, well, that was a bit of a just ramble. I'll be back with research soon. I've also got a letter that I received about frequencies that I'm going to read very soon. I don't know what to tell you. Hope you enjoyed it today. Go on over to my website, amazingpolly.net, if you would like to see some interesting videos and articles from around the web, or if you can send me a gift of financial support, I would appreciate that. You can either send something through the P.O. box, my address is there on the contact page, or you can do it through the donate button on the site. All right, everybody, amazingpolly.net. Go check it out. Join me on Gab and Rumble if you haven't already. Thumbs up, subscribe, leave a comment, and I'll talk to you soon. Until next time, peace out.